Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another Thursday night. It is downtown Sherman Oaks, and it is raining in Southern California, folks. In case you haven't heard, we have been nonstop water. My name is Jim Christina. I am the host. You're listening to LA Talk Radio, and this is The Writer's Block. And I normally am in here with Bobby Jean Bell, but tonight Bobby Jean is a little under the weather. She will be joining us again next week, but she's got the flu along with the bookie and just about everyone else I know. So everybody get well. Turn on your radios, get well, and listen to the show tonight because it's really going to be a good one. The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, the nice folks at Black Dog. If you're a new writer and you need some help getting started, you need some help kind of negotiating the publishing field, give them a call. The number there is 805-795-3165, and they will be more than happy to help you. Of course, we don't work for free. And from Out West Boutique and Cultural Center, and there are nice folks in Newhall, and their online store has just about everything. If you're a Western aficionado, love country music, love Western stuff, Out West has got it. And their website is svcoutwest.com. And then every week, of course, we bring up Target Freight because they are our favorite sponsors. And they're just like the best in the industry. And every show we mention them. And they have this truckload service that's the best in the industry. And it's the finest. And get your freight there every time on time at the rate you need for your transportation costs. So call today at 844-653-7789 and tell them you heard it right here on The Writer's Block and LA Talk Radio. And they'll have a little something extra for you. And while we're at it, if you are an LTL shipper, you are probably looking for the best rates with the least hassle. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just a ticket for getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web, and you can do that for both the full truckload and their LTL service. Call them today, and you won't be sorry you did. And we use them, and I'm not sorry. So tonight's show, we have a gentleman that we met last year at the Cowboy Festival. He wrote a wonderful book, and I just finished reading it this morning, and it absolutely was just really, really a fun read. And this guy is like, he's a total real-life cowboy. He's a contract cowboy. He raises dogs. He trains dogs. He trains horses. He's had, I think he's the only one in the world that's had more horse wrecks than I have. His name is Gary Williams, and I believe right now he's on the line with us. Gary, are you with us?
I am.
All right.
How you doing? Fine evening, Jim.
I'm finer than frogs here. How you doing, Gary?
Very well.
I do honestly think that you're probably one of the very few cowboys that have had more horse wrecks than me.
Do you know what, Jim? I've been very blessed.
Yeah.
Really. I've for what I do, catching wild cattle, it comes with occupational hazards. But
it does.
I've been really blessed that I have not had any life-threatening accidents.
Oh.
I broke my back twice. I broke my neck once. I've had a broken leg. I broke my rib so many times I've lost count.
Yep.
But you know what? I've never had a life-threatening situation.
Yeah, I hesitate to go through my fingers and tell you how many ribs I broke.
I went to the chiropractor once.
Punctured lungs.
And he goes, hey, Gary, have you broke any bones? And I says, hey, Doc, just get a pencil and paper out. Let's make a list.
how much room, how many lines you got on your paper?
Yeah, really.
I just had a hip replacement, so it's a direct result of horse wrecks.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That's a major deal.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't too bad. I'm actually walking upright for once in a very short while. You were born in California, but you were raised in Washington State around Kent, I believe. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah,
my dad had a little ranch there, and we raised Hereford cattle. And,
mm-hmm.
And you know, at an early age, I wanted to be a cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, with my dad's influence of horses and cattle, there, I started training horses when I was 12 years old, and dogs. And by the time I was 18, I was training for all the neighboring ranches there.
You know, as I was going through your book, and I you know, of course, you start when you're a very young man, and you go on through your life as learning to be the cowboy that you are today. And I was in shock. I was in awe. I mean, I'm an equestrian. I've ridden almost my whole life. And, you know, I'm a trail rider. I never professed to want to go after cattle, never had the desire to go after cattle, never had the desire to try to rope one. And I read your stories and I go, wow, this guy's like the real deal.
Well, as I said, I always wanted to be a cowboy. And so after I got up to a legal age where I could get out on my own and do things, I started working on a lot of the ranches around the western United States,
mm-hmm.
some of the big outfits, the mm-hmm. Lazy Bee and some of those, and learning from other cowboys and other ranch managers how to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see as my family grew up and increased that I had to have an increase in money. So
mm-hmm.
Instead of just being a working cowboy, I went to school and got my degree in the artificial insemination and started breeding cattle artificially. And then also, instead of working on the ranches, I became manager of the ranches. And,
mm-hmm.
and I would stay for 5 to 6 years and then move to another ranch. Well, all this time, you know, I'm learning different methods and honing my cowboy skills.
Mm-hmm.
And brought me back to California to a ranch, Ted Arthur Cooper Ranch, and a really nice, big Hereford operation. They ran commercial cattle as well as registered cattle.
Mm-hmm.
But they dispersed. And so when they dispersed, I decided, well, you know what, I'm going to make an occupation of my own. I'm going to start contracting instead of just working on these ranches, because Jim, one thing about it, when you're working on a ranch, they furnish your house, they furnish your utilities, they furnish beef and shoeing for your horses and whatever vet supplies you need, and you know, and it's really a good thing, except when you leave, you've lost all that.
Sure.
And so I decided, you know, I'm going to take up roots and start my own business and start contracting out, and I'll bid the jobs. When
mm-hmm.
somebody wants me to do a job, I'll give them a prize. Well, over the years, I built a reputation with great dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, dogs that are amazing,
mm-hmm.
and for working cattle. And so people started calling me, wanting me to catch cattle that they hadn't caught or were what I call spoiled cattle. They start out as spoiled cattle.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is cowboys go out and maybe they're not, I shouldn't say the greatest cowboys, but trail riders, and they want to gather these cattle, and pretty soon these cattle learn to get away. They run and hide in the brush. Well, they propagate. So those cattle teach their calves how to get away.
Mm-hmm.
And before long, you have a herd of wild cattle. Well, I got called on a job just after I had broke my back, and down south at Santa Paula. And the ranch was the Sloan Ranch up in Aliso Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
And they had created a herd of wild cattle there over a period of 20 years. The owner of the ranch, Bud Sloan, the senior, was a heavyweight fighter, and he had came into a lot of money somehow during his fighting career and bought a ranch and a bunch of cattle because he always wanted to be a cowboy. Didn't know a whole lot about it, but he went out and bought a registered herd of Black Angus cattle and a couple of Kianina bulls. Well, these Keeneana bulls, they're big, white cattle, and the breed originated from Africa, and they were mostly used for draft animals. But he turned these bulls out, and they were white, turned them out with the Black Angus cattle. Well, he and his wannabe cowboys would go out and try to gather these cattle. Over the period of 20 years, more cattle were getting away than were coming to the corral. Well, the man developed dementia, and his son, Bud Sloan Jr., took over the ranch. Well, he got my name off of a video that I had out called Cowboying with Dogs. Had my information and everything on there, and he called me up and he goes, Gary, he says, maybe you can come down here and take a look at this job and bid it for me, see what you can do. He says, we've had 18 cowboys out here for 3 weeks trying to catch these cattle, and they caught 9 of them. And so I went down there and I looked at the job, and I says, I think we can get this job done. I said, how many do you think you have out there, bud? He says, oh, there's about 250. At the end of the job, we'd caught 464. But these cattle were the wildest cattle I'd ever come across. I mean, literally, over the period of 20 years, his cattle had turned either gray or white. So there was no more Black Angus cattle in there. And you could see these cattle hiding in the brush from across the canyon. You could see these white dots. So me and my son and a couple of the cowboys that I had hired would come in from the top, drop down to them. And we'd come into that brush, and these cattle would do one of the two things. They'd just hide with their head flat on the ground. And the horses could ride right past them, and the only thing that would move is their eyes watching the horse. If you stopped your horse, they did one or two things. They either ran out or they attacked your horse. And what we were doing at that point, we're roping them and tying them down. And so we'd rope the one and tie it down, then we'd go back and the rest would still be hiding in there. As we got these cattle to the corrals, we had built the corrals because these cattle were mean. I mean, literally, we were roping bulls that were 2,000 pounds, and as soon as you would rope them, they'd come right back up the rope to kill you and your horse. And everything we roped, even the calves, would attack your horse. I mean, these cattle had run wild for so long that they were no more domesticated than anything else. So they were literally fighting for their lives. Anytime you rope something, they wanted to attack you. Well, once we got them to the corral, we couldn't get them loaded. You couldn't get in there on horseback because not one of them, but all of them would try to kill you and your horse. So we had to design a little different situation to where we built the corrals just wide enough for the bulldozers to get in with his blade, and he'd literally push the cattle into the trailers to load them. And believe it or not, they would still attack that bulldozer.
Oh, I believe it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You have pictures of those bulls in your book, and they're ginormous.
Yeah. And what we had to do, Jim, was we'd rope them, but there's no way you could get them to the corral. I mean, literally, these animals were fighting you constantly. So what we would do is we'd rope them and tie them down.
Right.
Then we'd bring the bulldozer in with a skid, roll them over on the skid, and we'd take them to the corrals with the bulldozers. It was an amazing job.
Yippee-ki-yay.
But I've done everything. I had a guy call me up one time. He goes, Gary, can you catch a goat?
I remember that from your book. Great story.
Yes, I can catch a goat. He says, Gary, he says, we've got this pet goat that we raised. And he says, we raised him off the bottle, but now he's older, and he climbs up on my wife's new car and scratches it all up, climbs up in our fruit trees, breaks all the branches out, and he says, we can't catch him. I says, you got a .22? He said, no, he says, you can't do that. He says, we live in the city limits. And he says, he's our pet goat. I said, okay. I says, I'll see what I can do. So I went out there. I took two dogs. One was a McNab, and the other one was a Border Collie. The Border Collies have a tendency to be a lot softer. My McNabs get kind of rough, you know, especially when they're used to catching wild cattle. So they go to the front and bite the face. Well, my McNabs, like I say, can get a little tough, and I don't like eating goat. So I thought, well, I'll use this border collie. But when I drove in the yard, here's this goat standing right in his yard. And I thought, wow, this is going to be easy. Yeah. I'll just take my rope and rope this goat. But as soon as I stepped out of the pickup with that rope, that goat knew it. And boy, he took off.
Did he?
So I thought, perfect. You know, I'll just hide around here behind the pump house, and I'll have the dog bring him to me. So I hid back there, and I sent the dog's name was Amos. And I says, Amos, get ahead. Off he went around there, that goat, and he was bringing him right to me perfectly. But I stepped out just a little too soon, and this goat saw me, and he veered off. Well, the neighbors had two horses eating in the pasture, and they were totally unaware that we were there or what was going on. Well, with this dog right on the heels of this goat, he ducked in into the pasture, ran right up behind this horse that was grazing, unconscious that what was going on, and it startled this horse, and he fired with both hind feet. The goat went one way, and the dog went the other way, and I'm going, oh, man, hurt my dog. And I look over here, and my dog just laying flat, and he's looking at this goat. And I look at the goat, who before the wreck had two horns, and now he's only got one. That horse had kicked that horn clear out of that goat's head. And I just walked over, and I picked up this horn, saying I'm stuck in my back pocket. So I went ahead and told Amos, I said, bring that goat. So he brought him around, clear around the back of the house, and I stepped off to the side of the house, and as he brought him around, I roped this goat. Took him over. He had a little pink collar on his neck, so I took him over the tree where there was a chain. Obviously, they'd chained him there before, and I chained him up. And I went up and knocked on the door, and I says, I've got your goat out here. He's chained to the tree. Oh, good. So he comes out, and he looks at this goat, and he goes, where's his horn? And I reached in the back of my pocket, and I pulled it out. And he goes, will he grow another one? I says, no, but if you had a little Elmer's glue, you could probably glue that.
I love that story. So
I've caught just about everything, Jim. You can imagine.
Oh, I can. You've got so many stories in this book. I mean, you've got three pages of content, just contents, and it's like you got a story for everything. And how do you remember all these stories? You sit down to write this book, and how do you remember all of this stuff?
You know what? It took 20 years and my wife nagging for me to write this book. Because I'd rather been out sitting on a horse someplace in the middle of nowhere than to sit down and write a book. And it continued on and on and on, her wanting me to write this book. And one day I had a job. This lady wanted me to meet her at the sales yard and ride down with her to gather some cattle for her. And on the way down there, you know, I'm telling a few stories and talking to her, and she says, hey, you need to write a book. And I said, yeah, that's what my wife's been telling me for a long time. Well, nothing more was said. About a week later, I get this package in the mail, and I open it up. There's a note from this lady and a handheld tape recorder, and the note said, I want your first book. So I put that tape recorder up on the dashboard of my pickup when I had windshield time going back and forth to my job. Mm-hmm. I get to thinking about stuff, and I put it on that tape recorder. Pretty soon I had that tape recorder full.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought, perfect, you know, I'm done. I'll have somebody write this down. Well, my wife went and got me one of those ThinkPads. Mm-hmm. And she says, you're going to write it. So 2 years took me to write that thing, to sit down long enough to write, get all that stuff down in there. And I think, perfect, I'm done.
No, not yet.
Well, the Lord works in amazing ways, and I am a true believer. And my wife has a tax business and bookkeeping business. And she had this client, and she just happened to mention to him, hey, my husband's writing a book. He goes, oh, you ought to have him come and talk to me. I'm the head of the graphics department at Cal Poly. And that's how this book got written. Well, in the meanwhile, he set me up with a editor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had it all typed out. I had spell check and grammar. I'm done, see? Wrong.
Right.
I sent it to my editor, and it's funny how things work, but she had absolutely no agricultural background. None. And so she'd come back, what's this mean? What's this mean? What's this mean? What's this mean? Because I had written it for cowboys and ranchers that would understand what I was saying. And so it was very fortunate that I got the editor that I've got get it into simple form so people could understand what I was talking about. So it's been an amazing adventure, this book in itself. I've had many, many, many people that have read it want me to write a second book. And if I do, Jim, it's going to be about all the great dogs and horses I've had, because I've had some fantastic horses.
You do a pretty good job of covering your dogs and your horses in this book. Well, at least your horses, not so much your dogs, but your horses for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's some great stories about. I mean, what was your favorite horse, Cowboy?
Cowboy was my favorite. Yep, I've got one now, Nugget. That is
right. He's your Palomino.
Very close second. But he is. Cowboy was by far the best horse because he could do a variety of things. You know, I was with the sheriff posse, and I could shoot off of him. I could do crowd control with him. I could do everything with the sheriff posse, as well as catch wild cattle. He was just an amazing horse.
Yeah. We first met at the Cowboy Festival last year. And
yeah.
I remember sitting with Dale Jackson right next to me and watching your books fly off your table. And we're looking at each other going, what the hell has this guy got that we haven't got over here? Well, for one thing, it was Elisa because she was sitting there. And I mean,
good thing I got boots on. I think
No, that's true. I mean, you were selling a lot of books. You're a natural salesperson, and you're a great storyteller. So it only lends itself to reason that you do write a book.
Thank you.
And I remember thinking, God, I got to get one of those before I leave, and I never did. And now I have one, of course. Of course, I got it for free. But hey. But I was amazed at the storytelling ability that you have, and it's your stories are just very, very, very down to earth and so realistic. Then one thing I did want to ask you is that as you're writing these down or dictating them, I mean, you're visualizing all of this in your head, I'm sure, and trying to remember everything that went on. And how do you remember everything that went on in a particular story? I have a hard time remembering what color socks I got on.
Repetition. I get it all wrote down, and then I remember something, and mm-hmm. I have to rewrite it. And, mm-hmm. and it just, that's how it went on. Mm-hmm. That's why it took me so long to write the thing, because I wanted to get all the detail into it that I could.
Right. Now, your publisher is the university, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. That's kind of cool. I mean,
that is cool.
Yeah. Now, but you don't have an agent. Of course, you don't need one. You got the university sitting right there.
Yeah, no, I don't. You know, I say, I'm a cowboy.
Well, first and foremost,
I've been doing a lot of speaking engagements, mm-hmm. and I had a author's club invite me down there as the lead speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And first thing I said was, hey, I'm not an author. I'm just a cowboy that wrote a book.
Right. Well, yeah, but you are an author now. Just going to have to get used to it, Gary.
I have to get used to it.
You know what? You have a section in your passage in your book actually, of about somebody who used to come up to Kent and visit your family. You want to tell us who that was?
Yeah, that was Roy Rogers. He was a very, very close friend of my dad's.
Mm-hmm.
Dad knew Roy long before he even got into the movies, and long before he, and most people don't realize that Leonard Sly was his real name, and he was with the Arizona Wranglers before he was with the Sons of the Pioneers.
Right.
And that was before he became a movie star.
Right.
And so my dad knew him before he ever got into any of that. And they hunted and fished together all the time. And just a great, great man. I mean, this is down to earth as anybody could be. We used to go to his place there once he was in Apple Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And we go up there as a family, and it was interesting to me. You know, first thing he would do as soon as we pull into the driveway, he'd run over and go, "Gary, jump in the Jeep. We're going to go look at horses." He wouldn't even say hello to my dad. And he'd have to show me every dadgum horse he had on the place. And he's just a wonderful, wonderful man. While we were there, it was interesting that he would fly out, say, "Well, I'll be back day after tomorrow," or whatever. Dale would stay, and then she would fly out. I don't know how they could keep their marriage together, because they were constantly going in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's probably
he
why.
Come up for the World's Fair
62.
Years ago, and he was supposed to come in to SeaTac Airport.
Mm-hmm.
The media was all waiting for him there and all, instead of flying in, he came driving in our driveway, pulling a motorhome and a boat, and he'd been touring all up the coast. Well, he had a few days off from the World's Fair there, and he says, "Hey, George," my dad's name was George. He goes, "George," he says, "let's go fishing." So my dad chartered a boat out of Westport, and my uncles and cousins and all of us and Roy, we all went down there. Well, my dad told us, the charter outfit, you know, "Roy Rogers is coming, but we don't want anybody to know."
Mm-hmm.
So we went out fishing all day, and boy, we got into some really good fishing, a lot of king salmon and silvers, and fished the whole day. Came in and literally could not get off the boat. Thousands of people had heard that Roy Rogers was on the boat. And we had to have the local police come and get us and get us off there. But good people. They were just very, very religious Christian people.
Right.
Just
right.
Wonderful, wonderful people.
Right. Well, their daughter Cheryl is just a friend of the show, and she's a friend of Bobby Jean's and Jim Bell's.
Good deal.
Yeah, Cheryl Rogers, and she does cookbooks. And
heck of a deal.
Yeah, she's.
I like to eat.
Yeah, well, we all like to eat. But she's a very, very, very nice lady. And I've run into her and met her several times at the cowboy festivals and stuff. And she's just a really nice lady. That whole family is just really nice.
Yep.
So, and you had one of Trigger's prodigy, did you not? Progeny.
Yeah, Roy gave me a colt, which was a Trigger colt, and but unfortunately, I was only 6 years old at the time, and he was a little bit more horse than I could handle. My dad ended up with him, but I've got a picture on the book with me on this colt we call Pal. He was my pal, and it's funny that I started out with that Palomino horse, and now I've got another Palomino horse that's just as good.
Now the secret's out. How many Triggers were there?
Oh, there was several.
Yeah.
You know,
each one did a different thing, right?
I really couldn't tell you how many there were, but Trigger and Trigger Jr. and there were two or three others that did different tricks and stuff,
right,
too, that were lookalikes.
Yeah, I'd read someplace that there were several, and that each one did a different trick. So
yeah,
so they're just cool horses, though.
Oh yeah,
I think that the original Trigger was just a studio horse, wasn't he? At one point, yeah, yeah. So what's plans for Gary Williams? Are you going to be writing another book? And we really need you to write another book, Gary, because you cannot get away from us now. You've made your mark.
My wife has quit nagging me about writing a book.
Well, of course she's quit nagging you because you've written one.
But no, I've got to tell you a little story, though. This just happened here before the rains. I had a guy call me up, and he goes, "Gary," he says, "can you catch a bull?" And I said, if I can find him, I can catch him. I said, what's the deal? He says, he's running up here by Nacimiento Lake. He says, just a smaller bull. He's been kicked out of the pasture by the bigger bull. And but he says, I've had cowboys chasing him all over up there, and nobody seems to be able to catch him. And I said, do you know where he's watering at? Oh, yeah. And I says, well, let's see if we can get him caught. So I went up there, and there was a great big flat area. And I thought, you know what, if I could get him on this flat area, I can get my trailer in here. So if I can rope him on this flat, I can drag my trailer in here and load him in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as it turned out, where he was watering at was down a hill. Well, I started down the hill there, and he was coming up the hill about the time I was going down, and he saw me, and he'd been chased by a lot of these cowboys already. So as soon as he saw me on horseback, he took out of there on running across this side hill. Well, I run up there right behind him thinking, perfect, you know, I'll just rope him when he gets down the hill. And he turns and goes running straight down this hill, and I'm running right behind him, and I see a little flat spot down on the bottom. I think, perfect. Mm-hmm. Rope him right there. Well, as he hit that flat spot, he made a right turn. He knew the country better than I did, and there was a little skid road that went back through the brush there. So I'm running along there ducking limbs, and I had two dogs out there in front, and they were jumping. This was a big, tall bull, and they were jumping at his face, trying to grab him by the face to stop him. And he ran over one of my dogs, and I was so close to this bull right behind him that I ran over my dog, too. And I turned around and kind of looked, and he was back up there jumping at this bull's face again, so I thought, perfect, he's all right. Well, as I'm ducking these limbs, there's a little ravine off to the left, and I thought, boy, I don't want to rope him here because he'll get down in that ravine. I'll never get him out.
Mm-hmm.
So I just stayed with him, ducking limbs and dodging, and I see another opening coming up, and I thought, perfect. So I roped this bull, make a long story short, laid him down, tied him on the ground, dragged my trailer in, loaded him in the trailer, took him to the sale yard. That little bull weighed 2,300 pounds.
Holy crap.
So I'm feeling pretty good. I get paid. I'm feeling pretty good. So I'm driving back down the freeway, headed home, and this car comes up alongside of me. And then he went on. Then he backed up, kind of slowed down, waited for me to catch up, and he looks over at me, and he holds up a copy of my book.
Oh!
So I gives him the thumbs up, see? And I'm still laughing when I get to the restaurant. When I get to the restaurant where I'm going to get something to eat, he must have followed me because here he comes with his book, and he goes, hey, can I get a signature here?
Now, that's funny right there.
That really made my day. Really did.
Hey, I'm gonna take a little real quick little music break here. Then I'm gonna come back and give a number where people can get a hold of you here on the show. And then I want to talk about some horse training and some dog training. So hang tough. We'll be back with Gary in just a moment. And we are back with Gary Williams here on the Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio. And if you want to call and talk to Gary tonight, the number here is 818-602-4929. That is 818-602-4929. And if you have some recalcitrant bulls or cattle you want pulled out of the brush, Gary's your man. he's the man to take care of it for you. You are also known as a premier horse trainer. And McNabb dog trainer, or actually all dogs, but you prefer the McNabbs for catching your cattle.
I prefer the McNabb, yes, right. And there's several reasons, especially being in the area that I'm at, where mm-hmm. it's really extreme hot, and we have a lot of foxtails and problems. So I appreciate the short hair and the tight foot, so that the foxtails are not getting up between their toes like mm-hmm. it does on mm-hmm. water dogs, and they have pricked ears, which keeps the foxtails from fold. You know, a folded ear
sure.
can catch a lot of stuff in them. So they, you know, but mainly for what I do, I have to have a dog with a lot of bite on cattle. And I don't mean a dog that heals cattle, because I don't want a dog to heal cattle unless they're healing them back to me. I want them in the front. I want them to be able to balance where I'm at and stop the cattle. So, but I also want a dog that is controllable. Now, there's a lot of dogs out there, and I've had some really good Catahoulas and black mouth curs, and they pretty much do a job that my McNabs do, but they are extremely hard-headed. I had one dog, Mikey, great dog, big Catahoula, weighed 110 pounds, couldn't run worth a lick. All my McNabs could outrun him, but he was a great dog. But I used him for catching cattle, singles, one at a time, because this dog originally had been owned by another rancher, and they let him run loose, and he got to killing calves. And so the guy gave him to me. Well, he would not herd, but if you put him on one, he was going to bring it down. And I got on this job. This guy wanted me to come and help him gather some cattle, but he said, you know, you won't need to bring your horse or dogs or anything. He says, I can bait them into the corral with a bale of hay. And I go, perfect. But I've heard that story before, so I brought my dogs and my horses anyway. But as I topped the hill, I could see him down on the bottom at the corral trying to bait the last three cows in. And he tried and he tried and he tried, and he couldn't get these cattle in. Finally, he sees me up there and he waves me down. So I drive down there and he says, can you get your dogs to put those in the corral? I says, yeah. So I took my McNabs out and they circled around these cattle and put them right in the corral, just slick as you please. And he ran up there and closed the gate. Well, he didn't quite get the gate shut all the way. And this one cow come busting through, knocked him down, knocked the gate wide open, and out she went. And so I put the dogs on her again, and they brought her back in. And I ran up there and helped him get this gate shut. And just as we got it shut, this cow took it off the hinges, just plowed it and knocked the whole gate off. Out she went again. And so we propped up the gate and got it tied in place so the rest of the cattle wouldn't get out. And he goes, what do you think, Gary? He says, I said, well, tell you the truth, I think she needs to go to sale. Well, he says, she always has a good calf. He says, can you can we give her some vaccinations? And I said, yeah. So I walked over to the dog box where I had Mikey, my Catahoula, and I opened the box up, and I says, get a hold. That dog went down through the brush, and my McNabs had already had her pretty much slowed down because they were chewing on her pretty good. But I could hear him. Every lick of the way, he'd woof, woof, woof. Pretty soon he went silent. And I says, give me your vaccinations. And I walked down there, and Mikey had this cow on the ground. And, I mean, literally had her by the side of the face and laying on top of her. And I walked up, gave her vaccinations. I says, okay, Mikey, turn her loose. He kind of looks up at me, and I says, Mikey, turn her loose. He kind of looks up at me. Mikey, turn her loose. I finally had to pry his jaws off of her. But he was a good dog for catching singles, but I'll tell you what, my McNabs can do that job, and I can call them off. Literally, I've had dogs jumping in the air to get a bite, and I'll go down. Boom, they just hit the ground. Yeah, and that's why I like the McNabs. They are very controllable, and yet the stamina is just unbelievable. I mean, Border Collies, and I've had some really good ones, just cannot keep up with the stamina on these McNabs.
And you teach them to work without even you being around, don't you?
Yeah, I've got... I'm probably an unconditional conditional trainer. I go to a lot of these dog shows and stuff, and it kind of irritates me a little bit because these trainers over-train their dogs. They want them to go right, they want them to go left, they want them to do this, that. Well, in the real world out there catching cattle... In ranch life, most of the time those dogs are way out there and they can't hear you.
Right.
And so I train my dogs with as few commands as possible so the dogs will think on their own. You know, dogs, especially cattle dogs, are bred to work cattle. Well, if you just stay out of their way and let them work and reprimand them when they're doing something wrong, but other than that, let them work.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly, I want them to go when I want them to, come back when I want them to. I want a good down on them so I can stop them, tell them behind my horse. Because a lot of times I've got lead dogs that that are a little softer. You know, what I mean by a lead dog is a dog that stays out in front of the cattle, keeps everything slowed down. If they start going too fast, then they get dog bit.
Mm-hmm.
He'll keep everything bunched up. That's my lead dog. Then I've got my stronger dogs that have got a lot more bite to them. I call them my fixers. In other words, they fix the wreck when the wreck happens. If the cattle break down a canyon or into a draw that they're not supposed to go into, my fixers will fix the wreck. So those dogs stay behind my horse until I ask them to do something else.
And your horses, are trained to touch the leg primarily.
Pardon me?
Your horses are trained to your leg primarily.
Very. Oh yes, yeah, yeah. They, I have two of my horses, Doc and Nugget. I've given several demonstrations with totally bridleless. I take Doc in and I'll lay him down and take the bridle off of him, and you know, he's just an amazing horse. Nugget's the same way. I've never taught Nugget to lay down, although I should have. He's gotten so dadgum big that at my age, I'm 69, he's getting a little bit tall to be stepping up on, but he's a great horse. But Doc, I thought, and he's a half brother to Nugget, and their sire was 16-1, 16 hands, 1 inch. And that's big. For those people that don't know the size of a horse, is 4 inches to every hand.
Right. 16-1 is a big horse.
It's a big horse. And he weighed 1,300 pounds. And all of his colts were 16 hands plus. Mm-hmm. I had one of them that was 16-2. And we at one time we had 26 brood mares and 2 stallions. And all of King's colts were big horses. Well, Doc was one of his colts. So at an early age, I taught him to lay down and taught him a few tricks and you know, figuring this horse was going to be huge like the rest of them. That way, as I got older, I could lay him down and get on him.
Yeah.
but a pot liquor, he didn't know, only got to 14-2.
Well, I've had a 14-2 horse.
But he weighs 1,250, so he's a big little horse.
Oh, I guess. I guess. Hey, where can people find you? Your website, email?
My website, cowboydogtrainer.com. You can buy my book through that. I've got PayPal on there. Amazon also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to get a hold of me, my email address is cowboydogtrainer@gmail.com.
Where are you going to be? Anything, any place special?
Any place special?
Like, I mean, you're going to give any demonstrations?
Do I have
any other
jobs coming up?
No, well, not job. I mean, you know, people aren't going to go out in the bush and watch you catch cattle.
Why not?
Well, there are those of us who might, but I'm just going to sit on a horse and watch. That's the extent of it.
I've got one guy who's wanting to take his drones and follow me around.
Oh,
my
with goodness.
His drones.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Might make a good movie.
Yeah, it might make a good movie. I mean, having met you and talked to you that weekend, I mean, you're no little guy. You're pretty tall. So I mean, a 16-1 horse is probably good for you.
Yeah. Well, and for what I do, I have to have big horses.
Yeah.
Anytime you go out and rope a 2,000-pound bull, you better have something substantial under you or you're going to get drug away.
Right, but you also need horses that have a lot of stamina.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. These horses are a huge part of my job, but I wouldn't have enough horses if I didn't have the good dogs I've got.
That is, though, yeah.
Because the dogs do. I take the credit for these jobs, but the dogs are actually the ones that helped me accomplish it.
Now, right now you have how many McNabb? How many dogs do you have right now?
16.
You have 16 ducks. And how many do you use consistently?
I sell between 60 and 80 puppies a year.
Holy crap, really?
I've got two litters due in just a few days, and 9 of those puppies are already sold.
Right. Now, these are all McNabs?
These are straight McNabs. Yep, okay. Registered dogs.
Registered dogs. So you kept 16 dogs, and you use how many to when you go up the field?
Usually I'll take 7 with me. One of them, he just goes because he's old, and he's been a great dog in the past, so he gets to go, but he doesn't. Depending on the job, he's 14 years old, and I'll use him on little jobs, but anything that's substantial, he stays in the pickup. Mm-hmm. So the other 6 dogs I use, I try to use 3 at a time, and I'll go half a day, come back, change horses, change dogs, and go again. Mm-hmm. That way I'm not wearing anything out, and I can continue to use my dogs and horses day after day that way.
Sure. Do you still have Big Mike in his cage in the back of your truck?
No, unfortunately, I lost Mikey to a foxtail in his lung.
That's right. That's right. That was in your book. Yeah. Hey, well, you're a coffee drinker, right?
I am.
Okay, well, you have a coffee mug coming from the Writer's Block. It's a very cool mug.
Perfect.
And it's actually the Postal Service will be picking it up from my house tomorrow morning, and it'll be delivered to you probably Saturday.
Thank you, Jim.
So it's my pleasure, and it's been wonderful having you on the air with us, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. And
absolutely. Thank you.
Now, you know, we're not going to let you stop writing. You have to keep going. Because eventually you're not going to be able to crawl on that horse anymore.
I do plan on doing another one.
Okay, good.
It just depends on how much time I've got to do it.
Well, I mean, if I have anything to say about it, I'll call your wife and I'll tell you, Lisa. Get him writing. I would. Gary, thanks for being on with us. It's been a great talking to you, my friend.
Perfect.
Take care.
Say hello to your wife for me.
We'll be talking soon.
Hope she gets to feeling better soon.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Okay, take care, my friend.
All righty.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye. And it was Gary Williams, and his book is called Lessons from the Range. It's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble from his website, and it's really, really, really a great read. If you just want to learn what a cowboy really absolutely does day in and day out, horseback, and Gary's the kind of cowboy that if he can't do it on the horseback, he didn't want to do it. So that's the kind of guy that, I mean, he's the real deal. He's a real cowboy, and he's just the nicest, nicest man. And as I said, we met him at the Cowboy Festival last year, and he jumped on the chance to come on the show with us, and I'm glad he did. And he was a great, great book, and it's just a lot of fun to talk to. Speaking of the Cowboy Festival, it's coming up in April. I believe the dates are the 22nd, 23rd, Saturday, Sunday. And we'll be having all kinds of stuff there in the Buckaroo Bookshop. And we'll be having it's an expanded Buckaroo Bookshop this year. I believe that the tent size is like 20 by or 10 by 50 or something like that. And then we have a stage right next to it. There will be a lot of stuff going on. So check out Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival. I believe that is a .org, thecowboyfestival.org, and it gives you all the information. And I believe the tickets are only like $10. So, you know, if you got time, go down for the weekend. It's really, really, really a fun time. You have the greatest cobbler there, hot coffee, and they're just nicest folks. And you come down and visit us at the Buckaroo Bookshop. We're going to be doing a abbreviated Writer's Block show there on the stage. And also, I'd like to thank all of our listeners that have made this show just absolutely huge. We just got our stats the other day, and oh my gosh, we were just absolutely thrilled with the numbers. Please pat yourselves on the back. Thank you so much for listening to us. It's been a great giving you this show. We're not done yet. We're still going to keep going. We're working on our second year now. And this is Jim Christina, and this is The Writer's Block. And thank you so much for listening. And thank you, Gary, again for being on the show. And we are right here at LA Talk Radio.